We reflect our ancestry, and I think that to be born a Kerryman is to have a head start over any other man born in any other part of the world.
And the man I was with is Morris Dowling, and Morris is listening to you at this moment in a hillside in Mayo.
Grey lakes and mountains soaring high, Mount Brandon's holy hill, the little church at Galarus, our language living still. The Skellig Rock, stout football stock that can't be bought or sold. For our county's fame, we play the game in the kingdom's green and gold.
Absolutely marvellous tradition, the Kerry, and you're imbued with it from the day you were born. I'd say there's a jug, the stripes are on your back when you go up to the holy water front. They're very sparing with water for fear they'll wash off the green and gold.
Look back in that tradition and, of course, apply yourself. Set your goals and go for it. Don't be afraid to go for it.
Coming. The Ghost Train on Radio Kerry, Monday evening 6 to 7. Come on aboard the Ghost Train on Radio Kerry.
Well, indeed, you're very welcome to a special programme as we continue our build-up to the All-Ireland Final year 2000. But many years ago, 40, the last Ghost Train left Tralee in 1960, and the people on that train were going to Dublin to watch Kerry against Down in Croke Park in that year's All-Ireland football final. But from the 1920s, they travelled from all over Kerry. They cycled, they walked, they used a donkey and cart the horse, but they got there. Bread and butter sandwiches, margarine sandwiches, porter was transported in a variety of containers. Shoe boxes were used as lunch boxes. They contained crew beans, pig's heads, pork steaks, and the odd rasher and sausage. There was a deck of cards, of course, a tin whistle was used, and a banjo. They sang, they played, but they enjoyed the Ghost Train as it made its way to Dublin for All-Ireland Finals in the 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, and indeed, the last one, I said, 1960s. Well, we did a very, very nice letter in indeed, and this one comes from Mrs. Bridie Sheehan. Now, Bridie lives in Doreen, Dwynan, Killarney. She says, "Dear Radio Kerry Sport, I help in Radio Kerry talks of people who travel in ghost trains. Yes, I did in 1940 in September to a final that Kerry were involved in. I come," she says, "from near Kinmare, and I cycled indeed through Miles Gap with my husband-to-be where he lived in Doreen farm lands. I am now living in Doreen," she says, "and I had many, many journeys on that ghost train many years ago." And she said, indeed, well, you know, it was a lovely bright night and they travelled through many towns and villages. And she says she's 88 years of age. Writing is not so good, she says. She has arthritis. But let me tell you that you, Mrs. Bridie Sheehan, thank you indeed for the letter to start off the programme with some more letters. And many people will be joining us talking about the ghost train with Bridie Sheehan. Well, we play a request for you later on. But thank you for the letter indeed. And certainly a lot of people with a lot of memories of the ghost train. One of those is a certain Phil Healy of Brandonwell in Ardfert, and he spoke to Joe Mahoney.
Well, I can remember in 1953 we went in the ghost train for Kerry and Armagh, and that time you had two trains going different ways. You could go to Ardfert, Debidonia and towards Limerick, and then you could go from Tralee, Killarney. So in 54 we went from Tubridge Station, Ardfert, and we left at 12 o'clock in the night. We got into Dublin at 8 o'clock in the morning. We just went for mass then, and the first thing was then to queue for the sideline. There was a sideline, and I can remember with Kerry and Armagh, we had, I was right on the sideline. Well, the Armagh captain got knocked out. He got sandwiched between Jim Brushman and Tom Ashen. He went off. Sean Quinn was his name. And I suppose the other thing I remember about the ghost train, that time we were getting nothing in the train, no catering at all. You had to carry stuff with you, food and drink, and I remember one man having a loaf of yellow bread. It was that time they used to make bread from the yellow meal. They would have milk and porter and all kinds of supplies, you know.
Right, and I presume there was always a good atmosphere on these ghost trains?
There was a great atmosphere. I think we would have very good songs and recitations, and I remember people trying to get to sleep, and I remember some people going for a sleep up in the rack there, the luggage rack over the seats there, and that was a neat and that, and some people would go up there and take a bit of a sleep up there, you know.
And was the ghost train always crowded?
It was fairly crowded, yes. In 54, we went for Kerry and Meath, and we went from Tralee. And it took us 9 hours to go up in the train. It was a bit late that day. And one of the things I remember, when we were a bit late coming into Dublin, we were looking out the windows for a while. And we discovered when we landed into Dublin, our faces were black from the steam of the steam engine. So we were told then that there was the first train coming down, if we got it at 6 o'clock, it would be a diesel train. So we got on that diesel train at 6 o'clock, and it broke down somewhere outside Listowel, and it was 4 o'clock the next morning, and we landed in Tralee. So that day, between going up and down, we were 19 hours in the train that day.
Right, and I suppose an obvious question, toilet facilities on board?
Well, they were all right. I suppose, you know, the toilets weren't so great, but I suppose they did the job nearly as good as now, you know? Right.
Now, obviously, Phil, there would have been a lot of characters on board these ghost trains.
There was, yes, there was. I remember one man from Banner, his name was Bob Steck. He was great at recitations, big long recitations, and he's there all the time, and he's very good at them all the time, you know.
So you were travelling, what, we'd say, 19 hours in one day. I mean, it was obviously a very tiring journey, but you enjoyed it.
We did, yeah. There was great supporters from Kerry, you know, they always went, and it was a great place to meet people, you know. I suppose earlier on, I often had people talking about earlier on, back in the 30s and later, when there was no radios or television. There was no television, very few radios. And when people went, they brought back all the stories, you know. And I remember talking about two characters here who they went to the match, you know. And the next night then, they were at the street corner, and there was one man very inquisitive there. He wanted to hear all the news about Dublin and the match. And one fellow said to the other, "Don't tell him, why didn't he go?" So you had all that kind of stuff, you know, but I think the Kerry supporters are great, you know, and even in Dublin, the traders in Dublin, they do an awful lot better when Kerry are playing, because they spend their money in Dublin. They're a long ways away. I was in Dublin less than, you know, for the whole in All Ireland there, and even the restaurants and everything after the match were nearly half empty. And if Kerry were there, they all would be packed out.
So fond memories of days long ago.
Oh yes, definitely, like, you know, you meet great friends, and I suppose always proud of the great Kerry teams as well, you know. They had such a great tradition, you know. Everyone was very proud of the great achievements of the great Kerry teams.
There we had Phil Healy of Bandonwell and Arfat recalling for Joe Mahoney his travels in the ghost train Minchin 53, course dear Jas Murphy, Captain Kerry, to defeat Armagh. 1954, dear John Dowling, Captain Kerry, they were defeated that year by Meath. But one thing about that, a lot of people don't realise, and that John Dowling actually went out that way. He was stung by a bee in his eye, actually, on the Saturday night before the game, but insisted in feeling out. Now, Lizzie Egan of Tubridart Firth, Lizzie called in to say she was on board ghost trains. Joe Gaffney at Ballymullen, Tralee, there's a name that I'm sure will revive many memories for a lot of people in Tralee and Furderfield. Joe Gaffney travelled on the ghost train as well. And John Murphy of Port McGee. John was a traveller along going those ghost trains, as was Christy Flynn, Ballyhigh. Another man that made a journey in those ghost trains of long ago was Michael O'Callan. Michael lives in Tralee Road, Castle Island, and he tells us how he came to go on the ghost train in 1939.
It all started with Duffy's Circus in April of that year. I went to the circus, and in my young days, I used to love going to circuses. And that particular night, they had a raffle. It was sixpence a ticket, and the prize was £2.10. I won the prize, and I brought it home and gave it to my mother, and said to her that I'm going to the All-Ireland. In the meantime, I met two friends of mine and told them the story, and they decided to go as well. And of course, to the ghost train was our chief travel at that time. But we arranged to meet anyway the night of the ghost train. We arranged to meet at Roach's Cross, Maglas, at 11:30, and cycled to Gortaclay Station, boarding the train at 12:20 approximately. Instead of settling down to sleep, I used Playmouth organ, so I was one of the lads that was with me, and we played away for most of the journey. We arrived at Kingsbridge Station at 6 o'clock in the morning, and our motto was to follow the crowd, as none of us were in Dublin before. As we were walking down the street, we noticed a church, and Mass was about to start. We went in, and I know that God will forgive us, because we slept through the most of it. As we went for a bite to eat in a little cafe further on, not a mighty breakfast by any means, but a room off the dining room we noticed, and there were sofas in it, and asked the ladies if we could lay down for an hour that we had travelled in the ghost train, and she said no problem. We slept for about an hour and then left. We went on to the main street then, O'Connor Street, and fooled around there for a while, and then the time was going and we decided that we'd go to Croke Park. We went to Croke Park anyway, and we got in, and we were underneath the Cusick stand, which was standing at that time. And the three of us now were standing. I was Michael, the next man was Timmy, and the next man was Tom, the three of us. So I was standing on the right-hand side. This is the story now. I was standing on the right-hand side. Timmy was in the middle, and Tom was at the left-hand side. And just everything was going fine, and the minor team were coming out on the field, and Timmy, now the middle fella, fell down in a fit. We didn't know what had happened to him, and he was in shivers, and he was frothing from the mouth, and we said, God, he's dying. Tom says, I, Tim, what are we going to do? So anyway, the crowd shouted. We went to pick him up, and the crowd shouted at us to leave him down. And that was fine anyway. We left him down anyway. And who came on with St. John's ambulance men. So they took him away, and they asked him, they're going away, who was with this man? And I said I was, and so did the other man. And they said to me, come with me, said they, and be a pardon to this man. So they took us into the bottom of the Hogan stand. And I said to myself, going in, if I have gone on through this thing, and that I can't see a match after coming up. But thank God that the man got cured to the fit he got, of course, and we knew nothing about it. And I was told to go out. They kept him in the Hogan stand underneath, and I was told to go out. And I had a fine seat outside in the sideline, and saw the whole lot of the matches. The same year, Kerry were playing Meath in the final, 1939. And, of course, they hadn't the Kerry colours at that time. They had to have the Dingle colours, who won the county championship at that stage. And Meath had the green and gold. So Kerry won anyway, and we met at the Kingsbridge station again coming home. And indeed, we had no mouth organs coming home. We slept sound. And we came home, and that was our journey with the ghost train.
Michael O'Callaghan there of Tralee Road, Castleina, recording his trips in the ghost train and where it would take you 61 years ago, 1939. That was the year Council Aherty's won a championship here in Tralee, and on the following year, 1940, a certain late great Dan Spring captain carrying Crow Park. Now, another letter in here, and this is from Ollie O'Mahony. Now, Ollie O'Mahony, you can see Ollie out and about in our town of Tralee. Ollie is a brother of Gary Mahony, and Gary, of course, was the goalkeeper with Kerry in 1955 when they defeated Dublin in a famous All-Ireland football final. Now, indeed, Arnie was into the house, actually brought me in the letter, and he said he travelled in 1953 and 1954 to the All-Ireland football final. He said the train was pulled by two steam engines, as they would be full to the brim at the time, and one would not do. The carriages, he said, were single compartments, no corridor or toilets, and you would be a very, very foolish man indeed if you looked out the window, as you would not know what would be coming next, indeed. And he said the huge crowd from Clash, he said that centrally there would be the Daltons, the Mullins and Collins's family. And as he said, he was always the tennis man amongst the whole lot. They used to put him up on the baggage rack and that's how he travelled on the ghost trains in 1953 and 1954. And we would also get to Dublin, and indeed Eddie Breslin, he said, would be waiting there for to meet him and take them to his house, where his mother had a fine breakfast. That was Eddie Breslin's mother, and he told me that Eddie Breslin's mother was a certain Slattery from Rock Street in Tralee, and that was she, Eamon Gal Slattery's aunt, and you know, that was Ollie's 53-54 journey to Croke Park on the ghost train, and the fare was 7 bob, or if you like, 35 pence. Now we'll take a commercial break.
The Ghost Train on Radio Kerry, Monday evening 6 to 7. Come on aboard the Ghost Train on Radio Kerry.
You're very welcome back indeed to Radio Kerry's very special All-Ireland special Ghost Train, but I'd be shot if I don't give the list all winners and placed horses at the 6 o'clock. Mutt and Timmy tell me that the winner 17, Moore's Light, was 14 to 1. Second was number 19, that's the Goose, 12 to 1. And third was number 3, Bob Justice, at 3. 2-1. But back now to the ghost train. And we have a little bit of music now. We're going to play this very specially for Lizzie Egan, who I mentioned, Joe Gaffney, indeed for Phil Healy and for Michael O'Callaghan and for John Murphy, Port McGee and Christy Flynn in Ballyhigh. Here is Amanda Takes Us on a Sentimental Journey, Acrobilk. Sounds of Acrobilk there and Sentimental Journey on Radio Kerry's special ghost train programme. Now, Frank Hennessy of Tralee County, Kerry, is known far and wide outside the county as well, and he has his own memories of the ghost train.
Well, I remember going up Sheamus in 1955 with my brother Sean and Tucker Fitzpatrick, and we left Tralee here, and would you believe this, that I got up in half fare at the time, and so did Tucker, and Sean paid for the fare, of course. But that was all right. We were at the match for the great game and all, and that was, we were just in front, sitting, as a matter of fact, where when Tiggy Lang got that great point out in the wing, we were on the sideline that day. And it was coming back, the problem started, really, because the checker above in Dublin would let me through the barriers. He said that I looked older than my age. I didn't, you know, a couple of days. Anyway, I was standing at the barriers and Tucker and Sean were inside and he said, there's no way you're going through, he says, like that. And then a man stepped out and he says, I want to pay that young man's fare. And it turned out after the man that actually paid my fare back to Tralee was Malice O'Doherty, who became newsreader later on, like, you know.
But, right, Frank, going back now to that journey up in 55, what do you recall of the journey itself up?
Ah, Seamus, it was packed, of course, like, and there was nothing, but I never see as much food now in my life, although I worked in the bacon factory at the time, like, you know. There was crow beans, and there was half pig's heads, and there was black puddings, and luncheon sausage, and packs of Guinness, of course, but the one most important thing was the deck of cards. And a big sing-song all the way, like, you know, it was a big party all the way up. Then we got into Dublin, we'd say 6:30 in the morning, and there was straight for mass. I was talking to Mikey Parker, who from Kilfin, who lives here in town now, during the week, and he told me that I remember getting in, and it was the same thing with him, going to mass. And he said there was two or three with him, and there was a collection going in, and inside there was another collection, and one of them said, let's get out of here before the third one starts, and we won't have a bob for Dublin, like.
Yeah, things never change, Frank. But Frank, like, all that food and everything, the one thing I've asked a lot of people, what about toilet facilities on these trains?
Well, Seamus, there was plenty of room out in the halls and out in the doors and everything, like, you know, it was just do the best you could and make the best of it, like, you know. But there was great crack all the way, like, you know.
There'd be many on that ghost train, oh, Frank.
There was no seats in it, Seamus. That didn't change either, like, there was no room, there was still standing room, like, you know, mob completely. But fellas just get it into their head in the last minute, blow on the pub, yeah, like, time of the train going 12:30. Come on, we'll go up and we'll go, like, you know. They'd go up to Dublin, they wouldn't have a bob in their pocket, like, you know. Just
right, and Frank, right, arriving in Dublin, as you said, watching the match then, but tell us that 55, Kerry won, what was the trip on the way back like?
Fierce singing all the way, Seamus, fierce excitement. John Down was captain, of course, and as I said, the great pint by Tiger Lyne. But we sat all the way back, we sat on the ground. We didn't mind. The sing song was great and the crack was great. And of course, Morris O'Doherty got me home, you know.
Frank, you went in 1960, and that actually was the last year of the ghost train. Who did you travel with that year, Frank?
Yeah, I think that was the last year, Seamus. So I traveled with the late Harry Cutton and his wife, great people, great friends of mine. Brody Weir and his wife, and I forget who else, like, you know. But that was fantastic as well. 1960, bad, beaten by Down again, like, you know. I'll have to tell you the story what happened there, Seamus. When we started queuing up outside Croke Park, I got sick of the waiting to get in, like, and the person was with me. I said, come on, I know a shortcut. I said, we'll get in. If you get on a bus with me, we'll go around. I know a gate at the back. And off we went, of course, and green and gold hats on and all. She had a hat on anyway, like, you know. And we got into the pitch and sitting down when the teams came out, she said to me, which team are Kerry? And I said, the green and white hoops. It was Shamrock Rovers and St. Pat's were playing. I took the soccer match, you know. Take off the hat, said I.
Nothing changes. Frank, that ghost train, there was no first class, second class, it was all classes, was
there
it?
There was nothing like that, Jim. It shouldn't have carriages or anything, like, you know. But in 54, no, Mikey Park was telling me, would you believe this or not? Well, I believe Mikey, of course, that 54 was the first time they used a diesel train going to on the ghost train, like, you know. And it broke down so many times because nobody knew how to fix the diesel and knew nothing about diesel, like, you know.
It was steam trains up to that. Actually, we were talking to people and there was some letters in from people, and it used to take two steam trains to pull the amount of carriages in the ghost train, Frank.
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, the crowds, Jim, is very hard to describe, but every carriage was mobbed completely, like, you know. But there was always great crack, like, great fun, great sport, sing-song and accordions and tin whistles, all that.
And, Frank, one thing, where did the ghost train stop? It left Tralee now. Did it stop everywhere on the way up, or what was the story?
I can't remember that part, Jim, really, because you hardly... I don't know how it stopped, because there was no room to get on, like, you know.
So I take it was a ghost train just from Tralee, and that was it, and maybe one from Killarney at a later stage.
We'd leave Tralee about 12:15 maybe at night, you know, and get into Dublin about 6:30 in the morning, like, you know. Then it was to Mass, as I said a while ago, and then down to Barry's Hotel. That was the meeting everybody had kind of met there, you know, if you wanted to meet somebody, like, you know.
Right, Frank, was there corridors on the carriages at the time? Could you walk up and down, or what was the story?
Well, you couldn't walk up and down because there was bodies everywhere, like, and I was one of them myself, as a matter of fact. But everybody seemed to help out one another, like, you know. It was a case of, look, you sit down for a half an hour, and I sit down for a half an hour, you know.
Right, the cost, Frank, can you remember the cost of travelling on those gold trains?
Well, as I said, in 55, the half year was 17 and 6, that'd be what, 80 pence now, probably. And I got up for 80 pence, or 17 and 6. But I couldn't get back, as I said. But I don't know what it was in 60. I know in 54, it was £2 and fivepence. Return, like, you know.
But great days, Frank, great memories.
Ah, wonderful, Seamus, like, you know. I was delighted to have been on the ghost train, like, and it's nice to be able to talk about it, like, you know. But in 54, there was a lot of things happened, Seamus. There was a neighbour of yours, you know. A lot of significant things happened in 54. A great neighbour of yours, a great footballer, the late Jackie Ryan, died. Now, in 54 also, Mikey Sheehy was born. And in 54, the referee in 53 got the cup in 54, was Peter McDermott, you know, and the first diesel train in 54. We also left the Rock and went up to Sanford in 54. So, you know, 54 was fairly a big thing in it for me, like, in Milligan, no?
Frank, can I say, with his memories of the ghost train and getting far and there to Crow Park, indeed, many, many memories indeed. Now, we're going to play a little number, and especially for Michael O'Callan, Ballybrannock and Tralee from Mastin, Castle Island, Nora Moriarty, Listowel, for Leo Griffin, Tralee, Billy O'Sullivan, Listowel, and Billy O'Sullivan travelled 213 times, he says, on the ghost train up and down. Maybe on the train, but on the train, he's travelled, 213 times by train to watch Kerry play in Crow Park in Dublin. This is very specially too for Frank Hennessy, who was a part of a skiffle group in the 1950s. It's simply from the skiffle sessions, it's Midnight Special with Lonnie Donegan, Van Morrison and Chris Barber.
Well, you wake up in the morning, when the ding dong ring,
ding and that ding.
Go over to the table, see the same old thing. Not my fork up on the table, nothing in my pan. So the only thing about it, I get in trouble with the man. Let the midnight special shine a light on me. Let the midnight special shine a love light on me.
If you ever go to Houston, boy, you better walk right. You better not stag on, and you better not. Sheriff gonna arrest you, gonna carry you down. And if the jury find you guilty, your penitentiary bound.
But let that midnight special shine a light on me. Let the midnight special shine a love light on me.
Let the midnight special
shine a light on me. Let the midnight special shine a love light on me. You're the comeless rose.
I hear the train a-coming.
The Ghost Train on Radio Kerry, Monday evening 6 to 7. Come on aboard the Ghost Train on Radio Kerry.
Well, you're very welcome back to Radio Kerry's All-Ireland Special Ghost Train. I have a letter in from a young lady. She says that her uncle's recollection, she's written it out for me, but unfortunately his recall memory at the moment is not very good. He's in his 90s, we're told, but she says that he recalls that the first train left Tralee at midnight. The train would be packed with musicians. They'd play accordions, fiddles, concertinas, and they'd party all the way to Dublin singing and what have you. The train would have a drinking car and a dining car, if you like to call it, with an open kitchen where the people could see the chefs dressed in white. The train would arrive in Dublin about 7 a.m. Then they would go to Mass and have big, big breakfast, they say, in the city. And she says, can you imagine what it was to my uncle then, way back something like 80-odd years ago, what a trip to Dublin was in those days. They would head off to Crow Park. They would arrive there around 1 o'clock, hoping to get a good spot indeed. And they would have to be early in those days. Now, she said the fare was 10 shillings. Now, that's roughly 50 pence in today's money. And she says she doesn't know how much it was to get into Crow Park or if the tin bob included the entrance fee. I doubt it indeed. And she said that was a week's wages to her uncle in those days. But he says it was well worth it. The excitement was huge indeed. And the roar of the crowd and everybody hoping to see Kerry win indeed. Now, also, she tells me a little story that in 1931, the team travelled to America and the team beat the Pick of New York in 1931, and Jack Dempsey, the man of Samoa, the boxer, put up one of his cups and a set of gold medals which were on display in Bailey's window in Tralee afterwards. So there you are, and there she tells me that Jack Dempsey was supposed to have Kerry connections in Castlemaine. I'd like indeed to thank that young lady for writing in, and I hope her uncle enjoys himself tonight listening to the Ghost Train. Well, now, a certain Paddy McGillicuddy lives in 11 Westview Terrace in Waterville, and he has his memories of the Ghost Train.
Well, my first time ever travelling in the Ghost Train was 1946, the Kerry and Roscommon Drawn Game. Right. We left Devonshire Harbour at 9:30 on Saturday night. And as far as I can remember, we arrived in Kingsbridge around 7 in the morning, or 7:30, I think, something, Sunday morning. Then I don't think there were any buses or, you know, or hackneys or taxis that time, just after the war. So they were there with the horses and their little cabs in Kingsbridge, and some tour service got on one anyway, and we went as far as the Almond Hotel. And we had a white tea there, and then we struck off for Crow Park.
Paddy, did you go on the Ghost Train much?
About two or three times ever. Right. But that was my first time going. And right.
And how did you find the Ghost Train?
Oh, okay, but I thought we'd never get to Dublin. she stopped and stalled a good few times anyway. I'll tell you that. I think it was turf that were burning that time, right, as far as I remember.
And how much did it cost to go on the Ghost Train?
My mother, there was the first cousin going with me, and my mother gave him the money to pay, but I think it was 7 and 6.
Right.
As far as I can remember now, I wouldn't be sure, but I think it was 7 and 6 for the return.
Now, obviously, you were going up to watch the football, but it was as much a social event as well, wasn't it?
Oh, really? It was, of course, yes. And first time ever, you know, going beyond Tralee. And, of course, it was an awful-looking sight to me, Crow Park, to see a green pitch inside the middle of a city, you know.
Yeah.
And then the stands and all, I couldn't imagine or believe it, you know, because I never saw anything like that in my life. When we played football, it was nothing but any green fields all over the place, you know, but Crow Park was an awful fright, as far as I could remember, right, to be anyway.
And what did you do on the Ghost Train to pass the time?
Oh, sat down talking, and well, I was the youngest and the smallest in the group. There were about six of us there, or seven, I think.
Right.
And wearing a short pants I was that time. But anyway, there was another chap that I mentioned, he didn't know, Paddy Murphy, he was a ferryman's son. And we were both put up on the racks, you know, overhead.
Oh, yeah.
And we fell asleep, but that's where we slipped all the way up to Dublin anyway. And the same coming down, we went up again, and as far as I can remember, we arrived in Devonshire Harbour Monday morning at about 4 o'clock.
Right. And who generally travelled on the Ghost Train? Would you meet all sorts of people on there?
Oh, you did, yeah, but we kept the one carriage because, you know, there was an off few, so and there were two or three of us very young, you know, and, you know, the boys kept the door closed, they wouldn't allow anybody in. We had a few fairly hefty fellas with us, so we were quite safe.
And obviously it was a big adventure for you being that age.
Oh, it was, of course. I was quite young that time. I was only my... gone 14 to 15 years that time was, yeah. So it was a big thing for me.
Right, and I guess there was all sorts of characters too on board this Ghost Train.
Oh, Everything imaginable was on that ghost train that night.
Any particular stories or incidents that spring to mind?
No, I can't really remember now because, as I say, I slept a lot of the way up anyway. on this net. So all I remember was when we walked out to Crow Park, we should queue like double or single, I mean, outside the Cowhogan. So it was there a guard from our class, he won the Murphys, you know, the famous Murphys.
Yeah.
The builders in England now. Martin, he was a guard, and I knew him well before because I was going to school in Castlemaine, that him. And Martin said, double up, lads, you'd be quite safe. So only for that we could lose each other, you see.
Yeah.
So when we doubled up anyway, we were all in the one lot. We couldn't be pushed away from one another then, so we were quite safe. We got in anyway to the long stand, and we were on the long stand for the match, the minor match as well that day. Kerry beat Dublin that day. Great minor match. Tom Moriarty and Tom Ash were centre field that day for the minors. Two powerful footballers.
Right.
Yeah.
So from what you can remember, good memories of the Ghost Train.
Oh dear me, I do indeed, yeah. I enjoyed it, to tell you the truth. I enjoyed it. And it was a great experience. You know,
yeah.
And of course, we didn't spend too much money because we didn't have time to spend the money there. We didn't have it, number one, but we couldn't spend it because we had no time. All we did was eat the breakfast, and we had our breakfast in the Almond Hotel that morning, and we had a meal that evening. I don't think it was the Almond, I'm not sure now, but anyway, it was all rushed for the train again, you know. But anyway, it was a joy to behold, and I suppose we'll think of it the longest day we live because it was the first time ever I travelled that distance. from Village Island, you know, on the Ghost Train. We had to cross by ferry first anyway, get the ferry out for the Ghost Train, and then get the ferry. We'd wait in until the early train ferry in the morning, until about 7, to get back home. So, that was my experience anyway of the first Ghost Train.
Paddy McGillicuddy from 11 Westview Terrace in Waterville, remembering the 1946 Ghost Train indeed. Now, that's another man that remembers well indeed the Ghost Trains. It's Dan Keating, Dennis and Barry Gamboon, Castlemaine. And here is his memories of those Ghost Trains.
Well, of course, you bought this Ghost Train now in Tralee. Usually left about maybe 12:30. At that time, they were all in closed carriages. No corridors until sometime later, you know. And there was 8 people, I'd say, in every carriage. It stopped at every station, even though it was full leading to leave, but whatever, they changed signals or something at every station. And there was a lot of stations that isn't there anymore, you know. And this train always, it arrived in Dublin between maybe 6:30 and 7 o'clock, and all there was no trams so early in the morning, you know, and you trooped down the quays. There was 2 churches on the way where mass was at 7 o'clock, and also in the Port Cathedral, the people arrived there, and most people went in and had mass. After leaving that, they proceeded and put in up around O'Connell Street. There was a couple of famous cafes there at the time, Noonan, the Palace, and a couple of places in Gardner's Row where you'd get a meal, you know. And at that time, you always got good meals. And everyone, I'd say, at the time, in the early years, you know, there was no minor football. And you were waiting there around, and then you everyone went early. Cork Park, entirely different. Now, you know, it was more or less overshaped. And there was three rows of sideline seats, you know. And you should be early to get to one of them. But it was great because everyone enjoyed it going. And then again, you had a bit of an interval in Mallet. They changed drivers, and I think they took on more fuel and all that kind of thing, you know, in Mallet.
Yeah.
And it was very good, and everyone enjoyed themselves, you know.
And then what sticks out most in your mind about the Ghost Train? Any particular memories?
Well, I mean, it was something special, and a way of getting to it. At that time, leaving in the ordinary trains on a Sunday morning, you'd hardly make it. And there was something about them, you know. And then they got the name of the ghost train, and it was a carnival atmosphere in the train. Up, even though that you were confined to the carriage, you could stick the head out of the window and talk to the next door and all that.
Right, so you had many good times on the ghost train and thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yeah, oh, you'd enjoy it. Anyway, we were young and growing, and then again, in them years, we had a great charity.
I hear the train a-coming.
The Ghost Train on Radio Kerry, Monday evening, 6 to 7. Come on aboard the Ghost Train on Radio Kerry.
Well, you're very welcome back indeed to the Ghost Train. Paddy Shukru of Ballybunion, he made a journey in the Ghost Train. Edzio Sullivan, 78, Rockwood Park, and Cahamarine Tralee made a journey. And a certain Nora Hannafin of Rock Street Tralee made a journey many, many a time with her late husband, Dinny. Lawrence Curtin of College Road in Castle Island made a journey. And the Buckley family from Fossa, Bridie Buckley made that journey. And Kitty O'Callaghan, 45, St. John's Park in Tralee, also travelled on the Ghost Train. And one of those great people about the Kingdom of Kerry, I'm sure he's on his way back now from the Stowell races, that travelled on the Ghost Train was Tralee's own Donnie Kelly.
Very, very long time ago, Seamus. More than I'd like to remember, like, you know, way back.
Right, Donnie, the travelling, where used you travel from? Where used you meet?
Used to meet in Jimmy and Boston's pub with usually Francie and John Foley, like, you know, we'd go down and we'd have a few drinks. So we'd make an arrangement for 11 o'clock, and it might be another time, it might be Roger Hardy's, you know. And the lads would arrive, of course, and we'd have a few beers that time now, like, it was mostly bottles of stout and all that, like, you know, it was a big thing. And we'd go along, didn't you see, and we'd say, we'd be nice bit of farm, like, and we'd go up towards the railway, didn't you see? And we'd be picking out the place, and the place would be absolutely packed, Seamus. That's the truth now. When you go up, now you could go up, and that platform the whole way down to the gate entrance, packed with people.
And this, Donnie, would be 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock at night?
We'd be on the way at about 10 to 12 or a quarter to 12. We'd be on Boston's or Hearties until that, and then we'd make our way up, and the place would be packed.
And that'd be people, Donnie, you know, from all over Kerry?
Oh, from all over. I can tell you, talking about all over, by God, they were iron people. There'd be rows of bicycles right opposite when we'd be coming in. There'd be 50 to 100 bicycles or more lying down by the wall to the gate, all the way down. And there'd be fellas coming out of them, and they'd be coming over, and they'd have brown paper bags, not envelopes, no, and then they'd be full of sandwiches or bottles of stout like ourselves or something like that. And it was unbelievable, Seamus.
Right, and of course, the late Jerome Foley, a shoebox played a part in your sessions to Dublin.
Jerome was always, you wouldn't be hungry with Jerome. The very minute we'd be inside in Boston's, Jerome and Francie might arrive in, like, you know, and geez, Jerome would have one of them Tommy Wills boot boxes, and he'd have it full of spare rib and sandwiches for the road.
Right, and Donnie, how long would it take you to get to Dublin? Leaving maybe 10 past 12. What time would you reach?
I'll tell you then about Dublin. Arriving in Dublin then was the thing. You arrive into Dublin maybe around you just make the 7 o'clock train, say, in the Franciscan church. God, do I remember it. I can see the altar now in front of me, and I can see the lights, and I'd be blinking, going down and waking up, and the next thing, that was the way Jerome would be half asleep next to me, you know, he was a bit, Jerome would be snoring next to me.
Right. But Donnie, that's another thing, the sleep on the way up. Did you sleep on the way up on that train at all?
There was no sleep, Seamus, no sleep whatsoever, like, you know. Well, I think, if I'm not sure now, Seamus, I'll have to ask you about these carriages, where there'd be maybe six at each side. Was that there at that time? I'm just sure now I would be travelling in that.
Well, I remember, I never travelled in the ghost train, but I remember the early trains, you know, there was actually the train you get on, there was no corridor.
There was no
toilet. And no toilet. That's another thing, Donnie. How did you manage with the toilet?
The first man I see making for the toilet, and it was Jerome. And of course, you there was no ladies on board. You'd have a few fellas like, say, me hot night, Belair, Tommy Foley, you know, the butcher, and we'd pick our men, like you say, and you'd have Donald Donohue and all them fellas, like, you know, they were all great lads, enough fellas we know round and Massey Quinlan. And the first man to make for the tile tenure was Joram, and the tile was dropped down the winter, and that's it.
Yeah, but Donny, what about if some fellas took his head out away down the line, he was going to get a mouthful?
Well, the trouble is, about that as well, if you only put your head down to look out, you'll be covered in soot. So, you know, about anything else, you might get a backwash, all right, but you have to take chance for it for that, like, you know.
Right, and Donny, how did you pass the time on the way up? You know, I know you had a bit of grub, but how did you pass the time?
Out, you know, Seamus, you get out, say, after the mass, and the first thing, you have a lot of time in your hands. But there was an invasion. It was kind of always known, in my time anyway, that you'd, everyone did follow the leader, and that was up to barriers. There'd be a line of people up to barriers. You had nowhere else to face, and the place would be over, packed.
Right. But only on the train up, how did you pass the hours on the train up? We'll say you leave at 12 o'clock, mightn't get in till 7. That's 8 hours, 7, 8 hours on the train. How did you pass the time away?
Falling asleep, waking up, telling stories and having that bottle of stout and all that the whole way up.
Right, Donny, can you remember what the fare actually was in those days, roughly, you know, the price of a bottle of stout? You know, just give it a...
Stout would be a shilling.
Shilling.
A shilling, yeah, a shilling. I said the fare was be around the train, how is it like, you know? I think about £1.25.
Donny, did you enjoy the ghost train? That's the big thing, you know. A lot of people you talk to nowadays, my God, they'd be looking at you. Enjoyment was there, though.
Enjoyment was non-stop, only fatigue, wore out, tired.
And after all of that, Donny, would you be able to see the match? You'd be so tired and a few drinks and everything.
The funny thing about it, you see, the trouble was, you see, we'd go to barriers, as I said, and then, like, you had so much time in your hands. I mean, it's only, say, 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock. We went in a bit of a stroll one morning anyway, and we had the first thing to go for a pub. Like, you know, there was no such thing. I said, it was all, you wouldn't open the pub till 2 o'clock in the day. But we happened to be walking around, and Christ says, you know, I think I see if they're going into the pub down there. It was down a bit of a lane where Brannigan's was the name of the pub. It's still in my head.
Right.
So we went down anyway, and we knocked at the door. And we were left in. Couldn't believe it, about 9 o'clock. And we were there anyway, and we had a few bottles of stout or whatever it was anyway. And we went away anyway, back up to Barry's again, and we were telling the lads all about this particular pub that was a great place. So we made it a rendezvous. But we came back there several times later, but it was a bit of a dodgy place. We happened to be there one day, and we brought Machine Scandal with us. This is true, Seamus. And there was a few of the lads from the TC list. And we were inside, and the next thing at 12 o'clock, the door, the girl to you. All in anyway. Yeah, all in, line up against the counter, your name, Donny Kelly. Donny Kelly, Mikey Brick. What players? Kims O'Reilly, Strand Road. Jerome Foley, Mikey Green, Mikey Green, Rock Street. All wrong names. Right. Never heard the word after.
Right. And Donny, what about the journey back? Was that as hazardous as the journey up?
The journey back was a nightmare, Seamus. The last train to Madrid coming back. There was chains being pulled, the lights would go out in the carriages. It was absolutely terrible. They'd be out on the track, or they'd come out and they'd be trying to fix the train. I remember poor old Bill Kinner, vividly, he'd be there, and sometimes we wouldn't get home until 2 o'clock. And them fellas had to face camp and owners gone these places with bicycles. They were iron men.
Right, and Donny, you say home at 2 o'clock a bit. What time would it leave Dublin? What time would that leave Dublin after the match?
You had plenty of time for drinks, Seamus. You had plenty of time. It could be 7, 8 o'clock. And it could be 2 o'clock by the time you get in. I remember one good laugh that I had on the way. A fellow by the name of Matt Lacey, you might have heard of him. He was working at the time in Matty Quilters. Met him in there, he was on the way back, and of course the breakdown, and he went, it was 2 o'clock, and this thing, by the time we get in anywhere, and who was with him but the late Nell Devine, see? So, God, says Nell, says, isn't this terrible? Says, this is terrible. Says, I have to face Henry F. and Dini in the morning. Says, all right for you, you have to face Matthew Quilter till 9 o'clock.
Great times, Donny, great memories.
Glorious, going down memory lane is wonderful, Seamus. And that's the way it should be.
The great Donny Kelly, dear, great personal friend of my own, and indeed talking about people that, well, the Foleys and, of course, the late Bill Kinnock, who captained Kerry and played with Tralee John Mitchells in his day. Donny Kelly, one of those people that travelled on the ghost train. Now we're going to take a commercial break. I hear
the train a-coming. The Ghost Train on Radio Kerry, Monday evening, 6 to 7. Come on aboard the Ghost Train on Radio Kerry.
You're very welcome back indeed to the Ghost Train here on Radio Kerry. Kevin McKelligate of O'Park in Tralee travelled in 1946 in the Ghost Train. Another man that travelled was Ted O'Keefe of Ballymac, County Kerry. Sean Colgan of Tralee travelled. And Bernie O'Connell of Valencia made a journey, as did Paddy Fitzmaurice of Tralee. Then we had Brendan McKelligate. Tralee also tells us he travelled. Eric Murphy. Well, Eric Murphy, well-known at Leith in Castlevine, he made a journey as well. And one man that made a journey too was a certain Jimmy Coffey of Ard Shanavoula, Killarney, County Kerry.
We leave Castlevine about 8 o'clock on a Saturday night, and we head for Farnforth. We meet the Tralee train in Farnforth, and then we change onto that and carry on our journey. But the Castlevine guys, anyway, they used to have a suitcase full of beer and sandwiches and all that, and they take the sandwiches and everything out, and the suitcase was a table. They played cards then all the ways up to Dublin, and there'd be some arguments and all that kind of stuff, but there was never any real row. And we came to Dublin around after six, because I always remember going down the quays and getting mass on the left hand side going down. I think it was Michael and John's or something was the name of it, and I fell asleep through the mass anyway. And I was long waking up when I hopped my head off to sea. So that shook me up for a while, but we managed. And then we go down the city and we buy the colours. It used to be 6 months for a colour that time. And we ordered our own heroes like Joe Cahan and Paddy Kennedy and Denny Lyon and Jackie Lyon and all them. And if we could get one of them guys, like he'd be up in our court anyway, going to the match. And then we hit up for Croke Park and we'd buy ice cream and chocolate and biscuits. That was our menu for the day. And we'd be queuing for hours, actually. For hours before the match, before the gates opened or anything. And Kerry won that match anyway in 1946. Right. They beat Roscommon. It was the replay. And the following year then, we went up to the cab to... the following year, 47, to the semi-final, we went up with Kerry and Meath. And Kerry went out and they went on to the Polo Grounds, and they lost to the Polo Grounds, but they were disallowed 2 goals in that match. Mm-hmm. And the next year I didn't go, and the third year, 1949, there was no ghost train from Castlevine, and I went on the back of a motor bicycle with Boss Welch up to Killarney, and we parked the bike and a friend of his in Killarney, and we got on the train to Dublin that about 9 o'clock, I think, we left for Dublin. And I think you had improved, actually, we got there earlier the next day, you know, before 6 o'clock, and it was the same old system, anyway, and really, we really had a great time and loved it. And then in the 1950, I went to work in Dublin, and I saw every match. There was no more ghost trains. I saw every match because I lived in Drumcondra. It was only walking distance from Croke Park, and that was it, really.
And what sticks out most in your mind, Jimmy, about the ghost train?
Oh, the tiring journey. It was really a tiring journey. You know, nice. You would be knackered the next day, but, you know, we ploughed on anyway, and we made the best of it. We were young.
Right, and of course, there's a day out as well, a bit of crack at the
legs. Sure, we'd be talking about it for the rest of the year. And who played well and who didn't play well, and the usual thing. And, like, we had our own heroes now, like the kids today, like, have you had old Seamus Mining and all these, you know? But everyone had his own hero. But we really enjoyed it. We do it all over again.
Jimmy Coffey of Ard Shanavoula, Killarney, remembering the ghost train and they're taking him to many great matches. We've had a lot of callers in, a Tralee listener phone, that there wouldn't be a word spoken between Kildare and Dublin as all the people had gone to sleep travelling in the ghost train. A Castle Island lady rang to say that she's enjoying the programme very much. It's very interesting and brings back lots of memories. An old Kerry caller rang to say that she's enjoying the programme. And a lady from Tralee rang to say that there was no petrol at the time, and that is why there was a ghost train. Others that travelled in that train of many moons ago was Liam Shanahan of Tralee, great follower of the Games of the Gael, and Penny Casey Waterville also made the journey on many, many occasions. Another man that made a journey in the ghost train was John Lyne of Muckross in Killarney.
Well, I was only on the ghost train once in 1955. It wasn't a very pleasant journey, really.
Nice.
We got on the train in Killarney about, I'm not sure about what, I would say before 12 anyway.
Okay.
Between 11:30 and 12. And it was a long journey, really. I'm not a drinking person, so I suppose maybe if you had been, it would be more pleasant.
The journey would seem shorter.
It probably would, yeah, because I can remember one thing. I remember a lot of bottles breaking on the tracks during the night.
Oh,
right. I suppose they have been thrown out the windows, you know.
Yeah. Grand.
That's one thing. It was a long, slow journey, really.
Right, and what kind of an atmosphere was on the ghost train?
It was quiet, really.
Yeah.
I know I was travelling with two friends of mine from here, from Muckross, and I got separated from them. I was in a seat alone, so there was no one near me that I knew. And it was quite, really. There was no singing or anything in our carriage anywhere.
Yeah.
And we got into Dublin. It was bright in the morning, I'm not sure what time, but it was quite bright, and we went to Mass first thing. I don't know where either. It was my first time in Dublin, mm-hmm. for a start. I'd say we had no delay anywhere. We went straight to Mass, so it must have been nearly 8 o'clock when we got there.
So what other memories have you of the ghost train?
Not a lot, really. Like I say, that's all. We were dozing asleep, I suppose, and waking up and wondering what time it was, and thought the night had never ended, I suppose.
And were you in total darkness for the journey, or what was the lighting like?
No, there was light, but not great light. But right. We had some light, all right. Because there were some fellas in another carriage playing cards, you know, so there was light, definitely.
And was there a good crack on these ghost trains? Was everyone doing their own thing? Some trying to sleep, some playing cards? Was there?
Well, you know, in the carriage I was in, it was kind of subdued. There wasn't much fun, but in other carriages they were definitely playing cards. You know, I remember that.
Right. And I suppose, as well, John, it was a good old social event, too.
Oh, God, it was, yeah. It was, and of course, at that time, I think the big thing was when you came back after the game, it was as if you had taken part yourself. You get a lot of attention due to the fact that you were there, you know what I mean, and had travelled on the ghost train.
That's it, you were the boys who had gone to the big smoke.
Yes, because that's right, because the people at home couldn't see it. They could listen to the radio,
course,
but they wouldn't see the game or anything, so...
They were relying on you to tell them...
Oh, God, yes, you got a lot of attention for a couple of days, yeah, definitely.
Grand. So anything else about the ghost train, or...?
No, I didn't much more I can remember of the ghost train, really.
Right, but you enjoyed it anyway.
Oh, I enjoyed the game, definitely, very much.
And as for the ghost train, an experience.
Oh, an experience. I'm glad I had it now, you know.
John Lyne, of course, there of Muckross Killarney, remembering the ghost train. Now, my sincere thanks to John Buckley. We've ordered overstayed our ghost train programme. Ran right into trouble, I suppose, ran off the rails, you could say, but our sincere thanks to John Buckley, who'll be coming up after this programme. Well, the ghost train there was, the ghost train people, surely, they were the great stars of the Kingdom of Kerry, indeed, like the stars of Kerry and Kildare at the start of the century, and like the great stars of Kerry for over 100 years, the people, surely, that made the GAA what it is today, were the people that travelled on the ghost train from the Kingdom of Kerry, from the 1920s to the 1960s. Now the driver, and just before we go to the driver of the ghost train, let me tell you that we she Fogarty's Terrace Talk tomorrow night. It's your chance to have your say. Comment lines will be open. Kerry against Galway. Your views accepted wholly once again on Terrace Talk tomorrow night with we she Fogarty and Eamon O'Sullivan. But the driver of the ghost train on this night here on Radio Kerry was Brian Amick. The conductor was Joe Mahoney. I was just one of the passengers from us all here on the ghost train. I'm Seamus O'Mahony saying, come on, Kerry.